Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Their websites, JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
Danielle, inflation is hitting us on so many fronts. Is it being measured accurately, and just how brutal is it?
Well, the recent reading came out yesterday for January. The U.S. inflation data was 6.4% on an annualized rate of change in January, and that was a little bit lower than in December, but more than the market had forecast, about 6.2. So the bottom line there is the trend is still coming down, and that is the lowest reading we had on a monthly basis since October of 2021, Jim. So that, you know, the trend is your friend, so to speak, with respect to inflation. The bad part is that food costs were up 10%, and that's something that's really hitting people hard. Of course, energy costs remain, fossil fuel costs remain elevated, but they have rolled over significantly since this number came out, and they have been coming off a lot since the peak. For example, natural gas prices have come off 65% from their peak. So that's obviously a huge impact in terms of heating fuel for much of the developed world, for sure. And we are seeing a profound downtrend in those costs, both in America, in major cities, in many major cities, and in Canada. You know, Canadian house prices have been falling for 11 straight months now, Jim. That's a significant downtrend, but they've only given back so far about a third of the 57% increase that they had during the pandemic, right? So this is still this hangover from the pandemic when all the bottlenecks and the free money handed out by governments and the ultra-low rates drove this mania of buying and all these goods and services and things like housing. And it created this spike, which just, you know, as we said many times, lagging indicator, inflation very lagging, takes a long time to filter through on the upside, but it also takes a long time to come back off the boil. And that's what we're suffering from right now. The other thing is that, you know, Canadian housing made up 14% of our GDP growth at the peak of the craziness in this cycle. That's a whopping ridiculous concentration in the overall economy. And so that's, of course, coming off significantly now. Like RBC has forecast, they think housing prices come off about 20%. Oxford Economics came out with a new report this week saying they see a 30% drop in Canadian home prices nationally, peak to trough, as their base case. And their worst case scenario is a 48% drop. And that's if we get into a really, extended recession. But the base case now is for a recession in Canada. And what we know about recessions is that once they hit, they tend to be disinflationary. We're already seeing the disinflationary impacts of higher interest rates in the form of lower consumer spending. We've had, you know, consumer spending falling for many months now. Although, for example, this morning we had U.S. retail sales jump again. That's the first time they've done so in about 5 months. But if we look at what the spending is on, it's essentials primarily. And secondly, if we look at the funding for the spending, that's where the real cause for pause comes, because we are having record credit card use. And those are at interest rates above 20%, right? So consumers are basically, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, moving from one credit facility to another, just trying to get the basics in. And that's the impact of inflationary costs, and which has meant real wages have not had any gains and actually have been negative for many people. So that is the setup. That, you know, inflation will come down. It is, the trend is coming down. It'll probably take another year for the worst of it to come off the, you know, to come off the numbers, so to speak. But even by this summer, we should see a measurable improvement. And, that is, I think, important. The other factor, of course, is interest rates, which we can get into.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, the Bank of Canada says it's going to pause hiking rates for now, but of course they can change their minds at any time. The U.S. has shown no indication it's going to slow down on interest rates, interest rate hikes. What's that going to do to the various currencies? Because usually when you have higher interest rates than the neighboring country, your currency goes up.
Yeah. So the U.S. Fed, you know, yes, in the last couple of days has sort of gave the markets a yank in saying, you know, I think basically they were very concerned about the dramatic return to speculation and easing of financial conditions in financial markets. Not in bank lending, Jim. Bank lending, we've seen a massive contraction in the loan officers' surveys and the money that's being offered to real businesses in the economy. That's come off significantly, which is a pre-recessionary indicator. But what we're seeing is this return to the presumption that the central bank is going to be cutting rates really soon, or, you know, shortly, that they've got the back of the markets, that they won't let anything come down in price. That mania or belief system is alive and well. I've commented about this before. We have not seen a crushing of animal spirits yet. And it's quite remarkable because we did have a significant drubbing going on in 2022. But again, the belief in the Fed put prevailed. And so we had this really dramatic easing of financial conditions in the last couple of months, even as the central banks have been hiking, even as they've been doing quantitative tapering, you know, the U.S. Fed rolling off $95 billion a month in bonds off their balance sheet. That's supposed to be, you know, taking liquidity away from financial markets. But at the same time, we've got the Chinese central bank has been pumping liquidity into the financial system the last couple of months because they have had such dismal economic results and rising unemployment and very unhappy citizens with the, you know, never-ending COVID lockdowns that they've endured. So you've got these push and pull forces going on, and what it's really done is reinvigorated this interest in speculation in financial markets, and you've seen that in all manner of things, like the junkiest of things, which is very interesting. So even as the S&P 500 companies have finally started reporting, by the way, negative earnings year over year, Jim, which again is a precursor, you know, the start of bear markets in equities always begin really in earnest once that negative trend starts on a year over year in terms of earnings growth. And it is the bulk of the losses in the equity market that come in the year after that switches to its negative trend, not before. You know, you've got basically the Bank of Canada is now expecting GDP growth of about zero for the next three quarters, Jim. So what that all really goes to say is that, you know, central banks are insisting on crushing the inflationary impulse. That's their job number one. That's their political mandate. That's what everybody wants them to do. That's what's really captured their imagination in terms of their sense of duty and their job, because everyone's terrified of an inflationary episode like we had in the 1970s. So that is the job number one. And they now look at financial markets who are trying to front run that and say, oh yeah, but we think the economy's getting so bad and the consumer's so hurting and things are rolling over. We're betting that you guys will be back to cutting interest rates by, you know, the third quarter of 2023. That was the bet coming into the latest Fed announcement. And the central bank has basically said, listen, you know, that's not going to happen. We're going to stay tight for longer and for higher and longer than you think. Now, I don't have a lot of faith in this crew because they have also, you know, said so many in incorrect forecasts for the interest rate trend and what they're going to be doing with policy rates in the past. But the fact is that right now they're taking a very heavy-handed approach in their rhetoric. And it worked in the last couple of days again because what's happened is financial conditions have tightened again, right? Assets have sold off again because there's this sort of, game of chicken going on. Like, are they really going to keep interest rates, you know, policy rates above 5% for a long time, like they keep saying? And so if that's the case, of course, the crushing blow to the business, the small business sector, the household, which is already, as I say, in dire conditions. You know, in a survey that I was mentioning on the blog this week, 50% of Americans say that they are going to be worse off a year from now than they are today. That is a very bearish reading that typically you don't see. You know, you've only seen that kind of reading, like 35% saying that they're going to be better off and the rest believing that they're going to be worse off. That's something that you typically see going into recessions. And that's not a bottom indicator. So, again, all of these factors are kind of working at cross purposes. You've got the financial markets trying to continue to gamble on leverage. You've got the central banks trying to really put a stop to that for now and bring down this, asset prices and the frenzy. And then you've got things like the commodity markets sort of buying it, right? They're getting the memo that the global demand is shifting significantly slower. And all sorts of the base metals, oil, everything is falling again. So I think those trends will ultimately prevail in terms of this inflationary impulse. At some point, the central banks will pause, just like the Bank of Canada is sort of, you know, the Bank of Canada is really in the middle of a nightmare in the sense of we've got this inflation in the household inputs at the same time that we've got this really significant downturn in housing, which, as I said, came off the boil of this ridiculous amount of concentration for our economy being on that. That was an unsustainable, healthy situation. And so the Bank of Canada is looking at that going, gee, our economy is going to be flat in their own expectations, which are often quite conservative, right? Their own expectations are flat GDP for at least the next three quarters. And also all the major, you know, economic forecasting units are now coming out with these pretty dour downside for housing, which the Bank of Canada realizes has always led major recessions in the past. Whenever you have a real estate led recession, they're always the worst and the longest, and they typically don't recover for a significant period of time. So that's the downside facing Canadian economy and the Bank of Canada, and so that's why they've paused. At the same time, you have the U.S. dollar strengthening today, in particular against the CAD, because if the central bank there is, you know, going to walk their talk for a while and keep rates higher for longer, that tends to be strengthening for the U.S. dollar. And it creates this stress in the world with all this debt that's owed in U.S. dollars. So it's this teeter-totter effect of as soon as the dollar is stronger, it exerts greater stress and pressure on emerging developing economies. It inflates inflation in Canada for things that have to be imported, you know, into our manufacturing sector, for example. So it's kind of this yin and yang that's going on. But the Canadian dollar is weakening in this environment relative to the U.S. because there's an expectation the U.S. Fed is going to go higher and longer in terms of holding the line on interest rates. And you've got all this carnage already happening in the household sector in Canada with more of to come. Like, if they're talking about a, you know, 30% peak to trough decline, we're only about halfway through that in terms of Canadian real estate at this point. And the longer it goes on is really the impact, because people will try and hold their own for a while, you know, but do everything they can to cut costs and pay essentials like their mortgage, but that can only go on for so long. And then, as I mentioned before, it's quite typical to see the unemployment rate finally start to tick up as you head into this downturn period, and that's when people really have difficulty meeting payments, and we are seeing that spike already in default rates.
What can a consumer do to protect themselves in times like this?
Well, the best thing you can do is try and keep your spending less than your than your income. Try and keep saving regularly. You know, the savings rate peaked, jumped up in the pandemic in 2021 there, and it was actually going in the right direction for a while, where people got a bunch of stimulus, and they had lost, they weren't spending as much money because they weren't going out, they weren't traveling, they weren't commuting, and they built up a buffer of savings. Sadly, that's come off significantly again. And for example, the U.S. household saving rate is back about 3%. So really anemic. So people really need to start thinking about, I mean, if they haven't before now, it would have been great if they'd done this before, but it's never too late to take on good habits, right? Which is not to waste, to be very frugal and intelligent with the things you spend on, to not be in a panic to get rid of your cash and throw it at whatever asset you think might double or triple or gamble. The thing is, you're being paid right now for savings. This is something we have not seen. The yield on cash, GICs, the highest quality bonds, these are things that have not been yielding, you know, more than 4% for many years. We're talking about back in 2007. So there is an alternative today. You know that phrase, there is no alternative, when people felt rates were near zero and there was no upside to have savings? That's different now. There is a lot of upside to have savings at this point. You can get awesome compounding going on. So you have to shift your focus from being a debtor to being a saver, right? That's really what the incentives are now. When rates were low, everyone was in a couldn't get enough debt, right? They felt they could carry any amount of debt. Well, now rates have gone up so quickly, they realize the downside of that, and it's put on a great amount of financial pressure. But the upside of that is that they are now able to earn a lovely yield to compound their savings at. And that's important. The other thing is that bonds have come off so sharply during the fastest tightening cycle since 1980, and they are now set up to have an incredibly good run here as we finally get to the cutting cycle. We know we will get to the Fed and the central banks finally capitulating, because they will have a pain point at which the economy is doing so poorly, and once unemployment begins to rise, they will go back to cutting. Well, at that point, the highest quality bonds are going to rally in price. So not only are they paying you a healthy amount of income now that's coming in every 6 months to your accounts, but also you will see a price gain or capital gain in that asset class when everything else starts to really come off again. So I think it's about positioning, it's about understanding cycles, it's about being pragmatic, being self-disciplined, and seeing the opportunity in this, because there is extraordinary opportunity building before us in this environment, and it's in every asset class. The ones that are coming off significantly will present a great buying opportunity, not yet, but in the future. And the ones that have already come off, like bonds, and things that provide safe yields and interest at this point, are the most lucrative we've seen in many years. So there's some smart things you can do with that set of facts.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Counsel, Incorporated. Check out our websites, JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. If you have any questions for Danielle or any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.